The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 23 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1975 season. Kerry were bidding to avoid a third successive year without a Munster title. Supporters didn't expect much, but what they got was the birth of the greatest team ever. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
1975 was a watershed year for Kerry football. After losing to Offaly in the 1972 All-Ireland final, Kerry failed to come out of Munster in 1973 and 1974. Cork had ended Kerry's championship hopes in both 73 and 74. Hopes were not high either for 75. Sure enough, Kerry exited the National League at the quarter-final stage, going down to Meath by 11 points to 6 in March. In the wake of that defeat, Mick O'Dwyer was appointed as manager of the Kerry team. Kerry goalkeeper, Paddy O'Mahony.
There was a team meeting after that game, actually, before we left Dublin, and that's where this team changed. O'Dwyer made us get serious. We did 27 days training in a row. I remember coming up to the Munster Championship that year, and it made men out of mice, really. We'd no clue in the world how to train properly. From the point of view of getting to the stage of fitness that O'Dwyer brought us to before the Munster final in 75.
Mick O'Dwyer had taken over from Johnny Cullerty, whose tenure as trainer may not have reaped on-field rewards. However, Cullerty's time at the helm laid the foundations for the years of glory which were to follow. Cullerty was responsible for introducing players such as Paddy O'Mahony, whose debut came in 1974, Jimmy Deanahan in 1973, Paddy O'Shea in 74, Ger O'Keefe 73, Ger Power 73, Mikey Sheehy 74, and John Egan 73. O'Dwyer fused those men with his own new breed of players, and the greatest team the sport has ever seen was born. Two men who had debuted in 1971, Paddy Lynch and Mickey Ned O'Sullivan, would be pivotal to the success of 75. O'Sullivan was captain of the side that season. He's quick to dispel the notion that this team appeared out of nowhere.
There was a transition from an older group of Kerry players that lasted to 72, and then the new breed of Kerry players started in 72. A lot of those young lads had been there for 3 or 4 years. There's a myth that they came overnight. I played in 4 Munster finals before we won one in 75. And a lot of the other lads did as well. At the same time, we'd won 4 national leagues. 71 and 72 with the old Kerry team. 73 and 74 with a combination of old and new. And then Mick O'Dwyer came in and he brought a new approach of physical fitness at such a very high standard of physical fitness. The lads were young and they couldn't get enough of it.
Three members of the 1970 All-Ireland winning side remained involved for the 75 championship. John O'Keefe, Brendan Lynch and Donny O'Sullivan. Jimmy Deanahan feels it was important to have some degree of continuity.
Donny O'Sullivan was on that panel. And even to have someone like Donny O'Sullivan there as a kind of a father figure was quite important. A lot of people don't recall that Donny was actually part of that panel, but he was, and still playing very good football. And John O'Keefe was always a great leader on that team. We all looked up to him, although he was just our own age, more or less, but he had that experience, and he was a tremendous athlete, and he trained very hard, and he was just a great example, role model, I suppose, for the rest of us. Brendan Lynch as well, they're all coming from his own background in psychiatry, in psychology. He was a very important cog in that team as well. So we brought some experience with us, but overall, it was a very young team.
Other members of the 1970 All-Ireland winning side were not so fortunate in surviving O'Dwyer's cull. Seamus McGarrett was among those whose intercounty career was cut short.
Well, when O'Dwyer took over in 1975, he got rid of a lot of us. At the time, I have to say, we weren't too happy about it, some of us. We thought we had some more to offer to the county. But in hindsight, Mick Dwyer was right. He went with his young Cubs and surprised Dublin in 75 and matured to a fantastic team in 78.
Renowned GAA broadcaster Micheál Mura-Hertzig believes O'Dwyer was keen to give youth its chance.
Some people said that he got rid of good players that had a little bit left. The team that had won in 70, they had failed to Offaly in 72, but there were players still in their mid-20s. Most of them were let go. He may have realised there's lots and lots of good young talent about. Give them all a chance together. Cork had won with a very good team. As good a team as Cork ever had, I believe, was the team of 73. They scored 5 goals against Kerry in the Munster final. They scored 5 against Tyrone in the semi-final. They scored 15 goals in all in that championship. They were surprised by Dublin in 74. I think they underestimated Dublin. Dublin had won Leinster, if you like, against the run of expectations from other people outside of Dublin. And then they were all set to go again in 75, and this unknown young Kerry team came and upset them completely in Killarney. And if you like, it was unfortunate for that good Cork team that they ran into a good Dublin team and a good Kerry team at the same time, and between them they were sort of suffocated.
GAA historian and author Owen Curry hails O'Dwyer's response to 4 seasons of failure.
Michael Ned Sullivan and Mick O'Dwyer, when they went to Gormanston for a coaching course in the 70s, they saw the Dublin team and the intensity of which they were training, and they came across this and came back in to Kerry in 1975 and said the old training methods, the old fitness standards aren't going to work anymore. So they produced, undoubtedly, there isn't an argument about this, the greatest football team this island has ever seen. Out of that, because innovation is what Kerry does, reaction is what Kerry does.
Ger Power acknowledges the impact of O'Dwyer's appointment and how his methods have stood the test of time.
The whole thing changed when Mikko took over. Like, you know, I think the emphasis was on unbelievable physical fitness. Naturally, the hand pass was in at that time as well, and you had just had to stay up. No, I wouldn't be the greatest man to do rounds the pitch to train. Like, and Mikko used to call me the hare. I might do about two laps at the start and then it'd be the end, like, you know. But no, to this present, yeah, look, Mikko's method has worked, and people can say that he ran people into the ground, this, that and everything, but if you look at Wicklow and look at the Kildares and look at all the other teams, at the end of the day, Mikko's system has worked. Like,
Mikey Sheehy too is quick to appreciate the step up once O'Dwyer took over.
We were training to win the All-Ireland. The training was absolutely savage, because when Mikko took over, I think in March of 75, and I think we trained 27 or 28 nights in a row. That's facts, like, you know. And I suppose some of us were never in my life encountered that type of training anyway, you know. And it was, I suppose at that particular time, it was as professional as it could have been, you know. And I think he realised that he had a very good team, a very good squad of players, young players, you know, because lads were coming through at underage level, and, you know, he knew that there was quality there, and he wanted to get the fitness levels up, and he got the fitness levels. I think, you know, he laid down the marker. Kevin Heffernan probably followed on, but I think, you know, that was the main reason, I think, that we won the All-Ireland in 75.
Tim Kennelly was among the newcomers in 75. Then-teammate Jimmy Deanahan believes Kennelly's placing at centre-back was pivotal to the success that followed.
I remember when we were building the team, Tim was drafted in at centre-back because they were looking for a centre-back, and it was just difficult, I suppose, to get someone of the calibre, I suppose, that you would want for a centre-back. And Tim fitted a bill. Tim was a great athlete himself. He was a great footballer. He had massive strength, natural strength from his farming background.
That season's campaign began with a trip to Tipperary. John Barry, in his Kerryman preview of the same game, believed that
Kerry are not likely to be suffering from any feeling of overconfidence, for the simple fact is that Kerry could find themselves making an ignominious exit from the championship at the hands of a Tipperary side that has shown excellent form in its last 2 outings. The memory of that depressing league display against Meath a few months back is still very fresh in the mind.
Barry stands over his words of over 3 decades ago.
I remember well that Kerry were hammered, absolutely hammered by Meath in the league quarter-final in March. And they played Tipperary in the Munster Championship in Clonmel. And I think people were a small bit worried that they'd have problems from Tipperary. And I tell you, those worries came to fruition, because it was level at half-time in Clonmel, and Kerry actually fell behind in the second half. There was a real prospect of a major upset.
Mikey Sheehy agrees that such apprehension going into the tip match was understandable.
Yeah, and you could understand why, because we were hammered above in I think it was the quarter final of the National League that year by Meath. Hammered us above, and things weren't right, you know. Things weren't right in the training hadn't been right. There was guys all over the place, really, like, you know. And I think it was shortly after that game that Mikko was appointed as manager, and the whole thing changed. It was like chalk and cheese. He brought his professionalism into it, and he knew what he was at. And that particular game that you're alluding to above in in Clonmel, I think it was. It was John Egan that turned that game for us because we were struggling. I think Tip got a goal early in the second half to put themselves a point or two ahead, and John Egan went out centre forward, and I think he got a goal or two and turned the game.
Mick O'Dwyer handed championship debuts to 7 against Tipperary: Bat O'Shea, Tim Kennelly, Juro Driscoll, Ogie Moran, Pat McCarthy, Pat Spillane and Ray Prendeville. Also on the team that day were Paddy O'Mahony, Paddy O'Shea, Ger O'Keefe, Mickey Ned O'Sullivan, Ger Power, Brendan Lynch, John Egan and Mikey Sheehy. Ogie Moran wore number 9 that day against Tip. In goals for Kerry in 75 was the imposing figure of Paddy O'Mahony, who in his earlier days harboured ambitions of making it elsewhere on the field.
Well, I was a very good fielder of the ball and I could hold my own at midfield against any of the players, even the Kerry players I played with afterwards, but I certainly wasn't too pleased to be pushed into goal. But then when I started training at a serious level, say with Kerry under-21s in 1973, I found that I was a bit slower than what you'd expect to get to the top at Gaelic football. So perhaps I grew into the goal then, you know, it kind of suited me. I had very large feet. I used to wear size 13s and we used to have to pre-order them from Dublin. If I needed a pair of football boots, I used to have to ring Adidas in Dublin and they'd send them on by train because you couldn't get that size of boot anywhere in Kerry.
Kerry against Tip was a game which was in the balance up to the final quarter hour. It didn't start out that way though. Ray Prendeville marked his debut with a goal inside 3 minutes. Kerry also put over the bar to race into a 4-point lead. The Kingdom were 5 ahead by the 12th minute. They would put over just one more score between then and half time. A Brendan Lynch point close to the break. By the short whistle, Tipperary had drawn level. When the teams turned around, the scoreline read, Kerry 1-4, Tipperary 7 points. Tipperary went out in front in the early minutes of the second period. The landscape changed, though, once John Egan was brought out to the 40, as Pat Spillane recalls.
I can still remember that day in Clonmel and Babs Keating playing with Tipperary, and Jesus, Tipperary were up for it, and it's a tight pitch, Clonmel, and we weren't going well, and suddenly everything changed on a switch. John Egan brought out the centre forward, he turned the game, and we never looked back.
Egan put over the equaliser, and then had Kerry in front after 10 minutes. In the 12th and 15th minutes, goals from John Egan put Kerry in control and out of reach.
Egan was completely unmarked in the edge of the square when Mikey Sheehy found him with a good pass. And all he had to do was flick the ball over the head of the advancing Tip goalkeeper, John O'Donoghue. Then, exactly 3 minutes after he had scored his first goal, Egan found the Tipperary net again. It was Paddy O'Shea who was responsible for the groundwork, fielding a great ball and making tracks upfield before parting to Egan. Quick as a wink, Egan turned and belted a great drive well out of the reach of goalkeeper John O'Donoghue.
A less than convincing performance, but Kerry had negotiated the banana skin that was Tipperary on a scoreline of 3-13 to 9 points. Kerry keeper Paddy O'Mahony feels that test from Tip was the team's toughest challenge of the year.
Tipperary were way better than us in the first half. It was only when John Egan and Mickey Sullivan opened up in the second half, especially John Egan, that we took control of that game. And would you believe it, if my memory serves me correctly, that was the hardest game we got that year. We sailed forth from there and never looked back.
Victory over Tip secured a Munster final place against a fancied Cork outfit. Jimmy Deanahan recalls how the previously mentioned poor start to the year meant Kerry went into this provincial decider as underdogs.
We more or less burst onto the scene in the Munster final in 75. Cork had an excellent team that particular time. They were going for 3 in a row. Nobody really gave us a chance of beating Cork in the Munster final. I remember in Killarney on a wet day. We just took that game, I suppose, by the scruff of the neck. That was really the platform that started us.
The return of John O'Keefe at full-back strengthened the Kingdom side. So too did the introduction of Jimmy Deanahan in the corner. Paddy Lynch was brought in at midfield and John Bunyan at full forward. Cork dominated the early stages of the Munster final but failed to replicate their superiority on the scoreboard. Kerry replied to 2 points from Denny Allen with scores by Brendan Lynch and Pat Spillane. In the 10th minute, a dangerous ball across the Kerry goalmouth went narrowly wide. Cork were not so fortunate 3 minutes later.
Here's Mickey Ned into Mickey Sheehy. Mikey Sheehy, John Egan running ahead of him. Sheehy gives it inside for Spillane. Spillane slips. Brian Murphy there with him, the number 2, still Spillane. Turning and twisting, putting it now on the left. Poorly inside, but it's gone in. Oh, fumble! A fumble inside there, Weeshie by the Cork corner back, and it's gone into the net.
Oh, that was a terrible mistake by Martin Doherty, the Cork corner back. That was one of the easiest goals I have ever seen scored in a football pitch in my life. The ball came in between Billy Morgan and Doherty. Doherty went for the ball, just to catch it simple. A 4-year-old would do it, and he fumbled the ball into the back of the net. Morgan is absolutely furious.
A cheeky Pat Spillane is still trying to claim that own goal.
No, it wasn't an own goal. It actually, I kicked it with my left foot. So I claim it, that I put backspin on it. You're right, Martin Doherty's own goal, yeah, which set us on the road. We wouldn't have been beaten any irrespective. We were a confident team. We were cock, I suppose. We had the arrogance of youth.
Mikey Sheehy considers that fluke goal to be a massive turning point.
It was probably a bit of a freak, but because I think they conceded a dreadful soft goal, which had a huge bearing in the game. And, you know, again, like, it was young, enthusiastic players, and you know, and the fitness levels were huge, and we just kind of ran away from them in the finish.
Not long after their first goal, Kerry had the ball in the net again.
Possession back for Kerry. Mikey Sheehy. John Egan is going through. What a run by Egan. John Egan going through, turning. He's kicked it into the back of the net, but I think the referee's calling playback, and he's penal. He's not allowing the Kerry goal. It's going to be a free in.
It's going to be free in. Kerry has free, Gary, I must say, indeed. It's a penalty, actually. It's a penalty. That's a very harsh penalty, Gary.
And it's Mikey Sheehy. And a great save from Billy Morgan. Not the greatest penalty in the world taken from Mikey Sheehy with a Parkman save.
Yeah, great save by Morgan. Puts it out for 45 and 3 or 4 young players with flags. Coming around, himself running around Billy Morgan. But was a badly taken penalty by Mikey Sheehy. But when John Egan was pulled down, and John Egan had his goal disallowed before that.
Points by Pat McCarthy and Brendan Lynch extended Kerry's lead.
Play was held up following an incident in front of the stand involving Paddy O'Shea and Dinny Allen, with O'Shea flooring Allen in retaliation for a blow received, and this really had the crowd buzzing.
After Cork's Declan Barron put over, Mikey Sheehy and Mickey Ned O'Sullivan pointed for Kerry. The Kingdom's advantage was now at 6 points, 1-6 to 3 points. Cork were then afforded the opportunity to halve the deficit.
Is Jimmy Barry Murphy going through now for Cork? Jimmy Barry Murphy! Oh, Jimmy Dean comes from nowhere and takes the legs completely from under him. Gerald keeps saying it's outside the panel and remembers the penalty to Cork.
Yes, indeed, and Tim Kennelly also said to the referee, that was outside the referee. The referee, John Maloney of Tipperary, said this was inside the box, and it's a penalty. Barry Murphy was gone through, and Jimmy Dean came up and just took the legs from under him.
Jimmy Barry Murphy with the penalty, and a brilliant block by Paddy O'Mahony. Paddy O'Mahony has done for Kerry what Billy Morgan has just done for Cork.
Saved by Paddy O'Mahony, the sparman. Jimmy Barry Murphy came up with the right leg and he pushed the ball to the goalie's right, and Paddy O'Mahony threw himself to the right, and Joe Keefe came in and he patches his Paddy O'Mahony. Says, well done, Paddy, well saved.
Kerry keeper Paddy O'Mahony believes he could do no wrong throughout the 1975 campaign.
I saved a penalty from Jim Barry Murphy. It was through the will of God. 1975, I could close my eyes and dive to the right or dive to the left and the ball would actually hit off me. There's no doubt about that. The gods are on my side. That's why I went through the championship without conceding the goal.
A Mikey Sheehy free 2 minutes before the break saw Kerry go in with a 1-7 to 3 points advantage. Cork had the first point of the second period, but scores from Brendan Lynch and John Egan kept Kerry out of reach. A relatively mundane second period was lit up by a magnificent save from Kerry's Paddy O'Mahony, who denied Ray Cummins a goal. The half was also notable for the substitution of Paddy Lynch and the reaction of his teammate and brother, Brendan.
Perhaps we should move on quickly.
Was it more of a football reason or a family reason that you were giving out?
It'd be difficult to separate the two there, wouldn't it?
Kerry, with John O'Keefe and Captain Mickey Ned O'Sullivan to the fore, defeated Cork by 10 points, 114-7.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Unsurprisingly, following their dethroning of Cork, Kerry named an unchanged lineup for the All-Ireland semi-final against Sligo. Paddy Lynch put Kerry in front after 4 minutes. Sligo equalised from a free. Paddy Lynch's brother Brendan had Kerry back in front in the 10th minute. Sligo were then handed a golden opportunity to score the first goal of the season against Kerry keeper Paddy O'Mahony.
Ball is driven inside Desi Cairns and shored up by Paddy O'Shea.
It's a penalty, Gary.
Yes.
Paddy. Is after being adjusted to hitting his man off the ball. The ball came in, it was a very simple ball. Paddy O'Mahony came out to collect it, and away off the ball, Paddy O'Shea hit his man a bit of his shoulder. And the referee, John Maloney, is adjudged to have a penalty. Paddy O'Mahony is not too happy with it. And Mickey Kernan's one of the all time great footballers. Will this be his last ever game for Sligo? He's going to take it.
Up against Paddy O'Mahony, he blocked the penalty in the Munster final, and now he's after blocking one in the All Ireland semi final. What a save from Paddy Mahoney.
A brilliant save by Paddy Mahoney. Wonderful save by him. The very same as the Munster final when Jimmy Barry Murphy shot went to his right. This ball also went to his right by Mickey Cairns, and Paddy Mahoney turned around the post for a 55. Great save by Mahoney.
Pat Spillane pointed just before the quarter hour. 10 minutes passed before the next score. Back-to-back points from the Lynch brothers, Paddy and Brendan, had Kerry in front by 5 points to 1. Come half-time, the Kingdom led by 7 points to 2. Points early in the second period from Juro Driscoll and John Egan made it 9 points to 2 in Kerry's favour. At the midway stage of the half, Ger Power soloed 70 yards up the pitch and put over. It was now 10 points to 3 to Kerry. Sligo were torn apart in the concluding minutes. There were 10 minutes remaining when the first Kingdom goal arrived.
Pat Spillane wearing the number 15 plays it inside here now, and this is John Egan falling back to his feet. Egan into the back of the net, a great score from John Egan.
Drakes and ducks, whatever way you want it. The ball came into Egan, and the seaman washed his way through. The defence came out. He went around him, banged the ball into the back of the net. Great goal.
John Egan and Pat Spillane were also involved in goal number 2. This time, the roles were reversed.
John Egan on the ball again, getting it from Paddy Lynch, going through the number 13. Inside him, he's got Mickey Ned. This is inside for Pat Spillane, and into the empty net. Pat Spillane, another goal.
Kerry are absolutely fine, and once again it was John Egan, went right through, gave the ball into Pat Spillane, and Pat Spillane punched the ball over the goalkeeper's head into the back of the net. Kerry are tearing Sligo asunder. They are giving an exhibition.
John Egan then pointed for Kerry before going one better.
Paddy Shea giving the ball now to Pat McCarthy, coming through, fisting it inside to Brendan Lynch. Brendan Lynch going through, where's the Sligo defence? Back to John Egan, into the net, another goal.
Yes, indeed, it's a goal feast here on Croke Park, and Pat McCarthy, the man from Churchill, stepped it all up. The ball finished up with John Egan, and John Egan, the Garda from Steam, he just came around and popped the ball past the goalkeeper so easy. Actually, it's a little bit embarrassing now, and Kerry are easing up that little bit.
The Kingdom won 3-13 to 5 points. Such was their clear superiority over Sligo that Kerry could afford to kick 18 wides during the course of the encounter. The All-Ireland final opponents would be Dublin, who took care of Derry on a scoreline of 3-13 to 3-8. Most of the GAA fraternity had Dublin down to win against a young Kingdom outfit, who it was felt were not quite the finished article yet. Examiner reporter Jim O'Sullivan was one of the few who was tipping Kerry ahead of the decider.
Not being boastful, but a combination of good luck and observance, I tipped. I was the only one in the national papers at the time. I remember being up at training in Parnell Park, seeing Dublin and talking to them and coming down to Killarney. And I remember distinctly coming away from Killarney that I was convinced these fellas were going to win the round because, you know, they were prepared to go through Stonewall. They hadn't established their reputation. They were all bachelors. A lot of them were PE trainers. So they were a height of their physical fitness. They were young. And they're some fabulous footballers, no doubt about it.
Dublin may have been fancied by the majority, but if Jimmy Deanahan's pre-match beliefs were anything to go by, confidence was high in the Kingdom camp.
We were looking forward to meeting Dublin because we had played them in challenge games beforehand, and any of the Kerry players who would have played in Dublin with UCD would have played against most of them, and we just had no fear of them. And I remember at the time making a statement to one of the papers that I felt that we would win the game because we were more natural footballers than Dublin were, and I remember I was taken apart for the statement, but I think we were more natural footballers in Dublin were, and we were just looking forward to getting out on the pitch and playing them. There was certainly no fear there anyway. We were just very excited about the prospects of playing Dublin on that occasion.
Ogie Moran came into the team at centre forward for the final. Mikey Sheehy was handed number 14, and John Bunyan was the one to make way. Nowadays, many people invariably shout for whoever Kerry is playing in the All-Ireland final. Back in 1975, it was a different scenario, as then Kerry captain Mickey Ned O'Sullivan explains.
It's the old town versus country, the townie versus the culture. You tended to have the whole country behind Kerry and Dublin because they were perceived as being arrogant, and they were so good at the time. And for a group of young Kerry lads to come up and beat them, and there was a healthy rivalry developed over the years since 1955.
Reflecting on the build-up to the decider of 35 years ago, Mikey Sheehy believes circumstances were in the Kingdom's favour.
The team was very much tuned in that day. Like, and you know, we had quality all over the field, as I said earlier on. It was a damp day, and I think it suited us. And in Dublin, really, we're probably a little bit overconfident. You know that now, and I think, you know, we caught them.
Kerry goalkeeper Paddy O'Mahony was a keen observer of the opposition in the moments leading up to throw-in.
My big memory of it is the parade around the field. All the Dublin players were chewing gum and they were very tense-looking, whereas a lot of the players and the Kerry team didn't know, we didn't know what to make of the occasion, really. We, as I say, we were a team of young fellas, we weren't given a chance. And Dwyer told us to go out and enjoy the occasion. And I suppose we had a fair idea in the dressing room we were going to beat Dublin that day, because they had been made supreme favourites by the papers. You know, the Dublin papers really wrecked it, their heads before the game at all, you know.
Dublin had the opening score of the 1975 final, a point by Brian Mullins after 2 minutes. Kerry responded with interest inside 60 seconds.
Paddy O'Mahony with the kick out into the middle of the field, and the Kerry goal for it, and it's Mickey Ned O'Sullivan who gathers it over there. Mickey Ned driving it long inside for Mikey Sheehy. Referee's whistle is gone. We should be free into Kerry.
Yeah, John Maloney right up with the player there. That was for a late tackle, and Mickey Ned O'Sullivan got the ball. He was going two defenders came out, and they know that Mickey Sheehy soars a lot, so they stopped him up very, very quick. This is Mickey Sheehy. It's rain pouring down here in Croke Park.
Young Mikey Sheehy to take this free now. He'll drive it in around the square. He might even pop it over. In fact, it drops low and is picked up and started by John Egan. John Egan dancing around two defenders. John Egan with a goal for Kerry.
A goal for Kerry. What a start for Kerry. The start they wanted. Long ball for Mickey Sheehy came in. It landed a wicked little bit short. And John Egan, the man from Steam, the Garda, he was there, he got the ball, it spilled out to him, he got the ball, he was pretending to go right, came back in his left, and he just, with the outside of his right leg, he smashed the ball past Paddy Cullen from point blank range. Wonderful start for Kerry.
Dublin were blitzed in the opening 10 minutes. Kerry were relentless.
Here comes Ogie Moran. Ogie Moran on his left-hand side is Mickey Ned going through. What pace, but Ogie decides to take his point and score it he does. The score from Ogie Moran.
Super point by Kerry there. And Kerry attacking the canal end, kicking it into the canal end. Whatever way you want to put it, Mickey Ned was running outside Ogie Moran. Ogie Moran went right into the heart of the Dublin defence, and with the right leg, he just absolutely popped the ball over the bar.
So now then, this is going to be a free for Kerry at a very, very tight angle. Looks as if this is Mikey Sheehy who's gone out to take this one. It is indeed. Mikey Sheehy's gone out to take this one. 1-1 to a point, Kerry lead. Mikey Sheehy from the tightest of angles. Well, that's a great kick from him. And it's now it's 1-2 to a point.
Mikey Sheehy, with his club only 2 years ago, and they won it for the first time in something like 38 years, and he was deadly accurate with the freeze that day. Now he came up with that, popped the ball over the bar. Great start for Kerry,
and it's a quick kick out, and Kerry not alive to this. So Dublin clearing their lines very quickly indeed. 1-2 to a point, that's the score here, and Paddy O'Shea comes tearing through the Dublin defence, and Paddy causes a lot of consternation, that kick inside there, but it's gathered inside by the Dublin fullback line, and they're clearing it out towards this side of the field. Pat McCarthy going for it. The referee's whistle is gone. It's going to be a free there. Paddy O'Shea, in fact, he waved for a free, but he left play go on, and this looks to be Mikey coming for the ball, leaving the ball after him. Nicely chipped up there again. The hits are going in hard from Dublin. We see this will be close and free to Kerry.
Yeah, this will be close and free, as you said. That was a lovely chip up there. That's Brendan Lynch is coming to take that. Brendan Lynch takes all the frees with his left leg. He played in goal for the Kerry Miners for 3 years, and he won All-Ireland medals with Kerry in 1969 and 1917. He fixed that ball with the left leg. Deadly with the left leg, Kerry.
1-3 now to Kerry, 1 point to Dublin. Great start to the semi-final.
Dublin pulled back 2 points to leave them trailing by that John Egan goal. Midway through the half, Mickey Ned O'Sullivan went on a mesmerising run through the Dublin defence.
Mickey Ned on the bus, Mickey Ned O'Sullivan, the Kinmare man, sold to dummy, and he got another clatter, but he's going through, he's still on his feet. Still Mickey Ned beats 2 tackles. Mickey Ned has beaten 3 tackles, still going through, and now he's sandwiched completely there. Sean Doherty was one, he's been taken to the ground.
Oh yes indeed, Mickey Ned got the ball in the middle of the field, and he was knifing his way through the Dublin defence. One of the defenders came out, tried to make a pass and tried to knock him off. Mickey Ned kept going. That's the way he plays his best football. When he's going through, he came straight through, and eventually Sean Doherty, the Dublin fullback, was at the end of it. 2 more defenders came across, and Mickey Sheehy said something to the referee. The referee's gone in. He tried to get Mickey Ned Sullivan to come up off the ground, but Mickey Ned is lame, crossed it on the ground, Gary. He never moved since he went down.
The captain's in trouble here, definitely, and looking at the player coming, or the person coming in there with the medical advice, and he says his hand stretched out, which means said that he's out of it, Weesha. He's gone.
Yeah, it looks like it, Gary, because his line passed it. He never moved since he went down, but he went right through the heart of the Dublin defence in a wonderful solo by Mickey Nader O'Sullivan, the Kerry captain, and one of the youngest Kerry captains of all time. Eventually, he finished up right in front of the Dublin goal, and two of the defenders came across. Sean Doherty came out. They all collided with him, and they weren't, as if they were saying, "Thou shalt not pass."
So then, Mickey Nader O'Sullivan has been stretchered off the Kerry team. Weesha, how much of a loss is he to Kerry?
Oh, he's a huge loss, Gary. That's a sad, sad sight to see Mickey Nader be stretchered off. They're going to be bringing on a sub here. We keep an eye. We keep an eye on what's happening. The stretchermen are breaking back, bringing him off now. That's a sad sight. Across in front of the Cusick stand, they're taking him off. When the Lynch tips the free over the bar, Donny Sheehan, one of the selectors, is walking along by the stretcher. He lifts his hands up to the air, and it is a huge cheer from the Kerry supporters. They're going to raise this. Gary, this can raise Kerry.
Match referee, the late John Maloney, later admitted to T.G. Carter that he did not see the actual tackle, adding that he did not know why he never consulted his umpires at the time. O'Sullivan has far from total recall of the episode.
I can remember getting the ball, I think, from Paddy Lynch. I was psyched up to the last, and I felt I could beat Dublin on my own. That was the rock I perished on. I remember running at the defence and getting a few belts, and then the light went out. That's as far as I can remember until I woke up that night in the Richmond Hospital.
Pat Spillane was the immediate beneficiary of O'Sullivan's demise on the day, but Spillane feels that incident had far greater ramifications for O'Sullivan himself.
I don't know, it was four times he was clattered. I mean, Christ almighty, sure, it should have been a red card immediately, you know? And it was unfortunate, Mickey, because he never really came back. Mickey was a lightning fast player, great ball carrier, and you know, he'd never really came back to his form he was before then, you know. It cost Mickey his playing career, really, that injury.
By the 25th minute, Kerry had stretched their advantage to 6. Kerry led at the interval, 1-6 to 4 points. Twice, Jimmy Keaveney put over for Dublin early in the second half. On both occasions, Kerry replied as points by Mikey Sheehy and Brendan Lynch kept the kingdom 5 to the good. Ger O'Driscoll then had the chance to put the game beyond Dublin.
The ball is driven in by Paddy Lynch. Paddy Lynch, he's picked out Ger O'Driscoll. But the ball is going over his head. Ger O'Driscoll, oh!
Indeed, Paddy Lynch got the ball in the middle of the field. He lifted in, and Ger O'Driscoll was behind his man, fielded the ball magnificently over his head. He got right through. He'd known to beat Johnny Paddy Cullen. He hit a rocket of a shot into the top right-hand corner, but it just, at the last minute, it just veered wide when it was going in between the crossbar and the post. That's a miss for Ger O'Driscoll.
Kerry's Mikey Sheehy pointed, and Jimmy Keaveney did likewise for Dublin. A Pat Spillane point followed, and Keaveney once more did the same at the opposite end. Kerry's advantage at this stage remained at 5 points, 110-8, and there were 17 minutes remaining. 13 minutes from time, John Egan could have wrapped up a Kerry win, but his punched effort rebounded off the crossbar. Jimmy Keaveney and Pat Spillane swapped points. 5 minutes from time, Ger O'Driscoll atoned for his glaring miss from earlier in the half.
Nicely chipped up there by John O'Keefe into himself and out now to Jimmy Deanahan. And Jimmy drives it long inside again, well held inside there. That's by Mikey Sheehy. Certainly has had the beating of Sean Doherty all afternoon. Lovely pass by Sheehy. Bogey Moran unable to get it into his hands. Now he has it in his hand. Bogey Moran plays it outside. Here's the chance for Kerry. Ger O'Driscoll with the flick, and Ger O'Driscoll into the net. And that looks like an All-Ireland Weesha for Kerry.
Yes, indeed. No mistake that time by Ger O'Driscoll. He might have missed the one earlier on, but there was no mistake that time. It was a lovely movement by Kerry. Ogie Moran with his lovely distinctive style, he came right through, he passed the ball off into the corner, and it was Pat McCarthy who saw Ger O'Driscoll on the verge of the square all in his own. The Churchill man punched the ball across the face of the goal, and Ger O'Driscoll, the man from Valinch Island, rose high and punched the ball past Paddy Cullen.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
As full-time approached, Pat Spillane discovered that on top of winning an All-Ireland medal, he would be making the legendary journey up the steps to collect Sam Maguire.
The end of the game, because I wouldn't tell me at half-time that just in case. No, they said that would affect me. And I always remember walking up the stand with the head steward at the time, asking him for the Irish for on behalf of their son, and you know it. So Tano was a Cornish clocker son, Fern Curry. That was it. That was my couple of fuckle.
Christ, I mean, my first All-Ireland final, and I ended up getting the ultimate accolade of taking the Sam Maguire and the Hogan Stand in 75. I've never seen it since. Certainly would have been the worst speech ever given by an All-Ireland winning captain, you know. The
Kerry were All-Ireland champions for the first time in five seasons, thanks to a 2-12 to 11 points defeat of Dublin. Amidst the celebrations, Pat Spillane did not forget team captain Mickey Nettles-Sullivan.
Pat came in with the cup. It was that night, I think. It was the night. I was relieved to be able to get out the following day, you know. It's a physical contact game, and when you play it, as part and parcel, you accept that. And that time, it was very much part and parcel, physical contact, and you had to dish it out, you had to give and take it. So, you know, it was part and parcel. You took it and you gave it, and you accepted it, and you shook hands when the game was over. Now, for you, for young people to look at that, they think that was pure thuggery, but we took all that as part and parcel of the game at the time, and we accepted it. And there was never any ill feeling. You shook hands when the game was over, and that's it, and you moved on.
Kerry did not concede a single goal during the 75 championship campaign, with goalkeeper himself, Paddy O'Mahony, the main reason behind that statistic.
To have won an All-Ireland medal on the field of play with Kerry is very special, and that year, the interesting thing about it is I made a bit of history myself, because I went through the championship without conceding a goal, and I saved two penalties along the way. And that's, to this day, is still a record, and I'm very proud of that fact. You know, I always love Kerry to win Ireland, but Diarmuid Murphy to let in one goal. I'm very close to Diarmuid because my office was over his office downtown here in Killarney for 4 years, and we became very close friends, really.
John Egan remembers that Kerry had travelled to the final convinced they would be victorious.
People talk about that as being one of the great Kerry displays. I don't think so. I think it was a display of fierce enthusiasm, fierce appetite, and we were young and we were raw with absolutely no experience. Because we never ever thought about losing that match. He was so positive, we didn't even worry about Dublin. Like, Dublin didn't even. I remember going up that day, we were really, really convinced we were going to win it, and an awful lot of people were surprised with the way we performed. But I suppose in any given day, in any given match, you need to get the breaks, and we got a goal early. I got a goal, ball broke down, handy enough goal. You gained initiative in the match. We got the first score. We were flying fit, ran Dublin off their feet, aging team. That's where it all started. Young, fresh Kerry team, hungry, winning the first time out. People were amazed. I could not believe now when you read after, but Dublin were going to destroy Kerry and all that. But we were convinced anyway that we're going to beat Dublin that day.
Mickey Nettles-Sullivan may have been deprived of the opportunity of lifting the Sam Maguire in 1975, but he would do so eventually, albeit 30 years later.
It was an idea the club in the Kenmare came up with in order to raise funds. It's hard to imagine that between Kerry and Dublin, they never had any official get-together during their time of playing and subsequently. So we thought it was a good idea, bring them together. Between them, they had about 300 All-Ireland medals. They had won 12 out of 13 All-Irelands in a row. Two groups of people together in a room with 300 medals between them. It was an amazing achievement.
Kerry would go on to relinquish their title to Dublin the following season, but 75 was the beginning of something special. The significance of that season's victory is not lost on journalist Donal Keenan.
Well, I think it was extraordinary because, firstly, I suppose the team was so young. You know, so many of them came through for the first time. Mikko had taken, I suppose, a huge gamble, really, in assembling a team like that to come and take the Dubs. But I think we all got caught up fairly quickly in the excitement of this team because of the way they played the game, the speed with which they played the game. From an early stage, we knew there was something special coming through here. While it was a surprise in the end as the year progressed, and it wasn't like now the qualifiers and so many matches to be played. It was a very short burst. But quite quickly, everyone realised this team was special.
Like so many of the heroes of 1975, Mikey Sheehy went on to win multiple All-Ireland medals. He was showered with many personal accolades for seasons to come. Sheehy, however, could that year have been lost to Gaelic football and the Kerry team. Fortunately, the Austin Stack sharpshooter was a home bird.
I used to play a bit of soccer around here. I used to love soccer, and it was around 75, and, you know, I suppose I don't honestly know where it came from, but I did get an offer to go over to Southampton for a trial, and I got a call from somebody connected with Glasgow Celtic to know would I be interested in going over. And I suppose, look, you know, I suppose in those days in 75, you know, and I was always a home bird. I never did, and you know, and I would never even have any regrets. The only thing you'd love to see how good these guys are, you know, you'd love obviously to be given the opportunity, but Gaelic football was always going to be my first choice. But you'd love to see, you know, would you be comfortable in their company type of thing, you know. But I really and truthfully, Joe, didn't give it a whole lot of thought, I'll be true with you, because at that particular time, Kerry had won the All-Ireland 75, we won the Under-21 as well, Kerry won the treble. You know, and football, really, Gaelic football was going to be number one anyway.
Southampton was mentioned as well.
It was. I got a letter from somebody from the club, that Larry McMenemy was the manager at the time, and they wrote direct to me and so on. But it was never an issue, really, you know. They gave me a list of the reserve team fixtures to go over, to get in contact with them. And I never got in contact with him, and that was basically it.
Paddy O'Mahony admits that the enormity of what they achieved in 1975 did not sink in immediately.
It's only afterwards that you realise that, like when you, like the homecoming, we actually won that game, and the homecoming we were treated like gods, really, and we had a really, what we call, great support from the fans throughout the county for the winter, you know, we carried the cup everywhere, and... It's part of the folklore of the Kerry County itself.
How gloomy was the hill today, but not dear Beaufort Hill. The flags of Heffo's army boys, how limp they hung and still, their bearers stunned by dire defeat, by Kerry's brave young team, the Dubs' young bloods to silence hushed by our gallant gold and green. Can any team be lucky, boys, to do so mean a foul? Our hearts were sad and sore indeed when Mickey left the ground. For when the great O'Sullivan was racing through to score, not one or two but four of them combined to block his road. Hurrah, my boys, we came again for gallant Mick O'Dwyer. How could we let our hero down who trained us for the fight? And bonfires blaze from Templenowe all around to Old Tralee, and show the land we beat the champs, we've number 23. We'll meet the seniors at Rathmore and meet the minors too. They've brought such glory to our homes with skills of hand and boot. And in each town we'll throng the crowds and surge in living waves and drink and chat and check the watch and mob that lovely train. All through the week, some experts seemed to doubt our skill to win. Too young, they said, the wise old heads. So now what do they think? As Kerry's peaks have stood for years against the gales and snow, some hardy forces in our bones whene'er we meet the foe. Go carve their names in the Hall of Fame, in golden letters high. They'll join the ranks of Kerry's champs, O'Connell Lander's lines. And ere I close my joyful poem, we'll name them, every man who were so brave this autumn day and kept their goal intact. Our Johnny's great successor, O'Mahony, was sound. The Lynches and O'Keefe's were there, like deer they swept the ground. Great Egan and O'Driscoll brave, they shook the Dublin net. I feel the Dubs are reeling still from the blizzard that they met. Jerp Howard, Spillane, McCarthy, where would you see the like? And Deanahan and Moran and Kennelly played in style. Young Sheehy there of noted race and the captain from Kenmare. John Bunyan, Long and Walsh were fit, and Doney and O'Shea's. Tis long they'll tell the story of the brave young Kerry team who are riding home in glory to their kingdom by the sea. God grant them health and plenty who raised our hearts so high, and long life to gallant Michael, the dauntless Mick O'Dwyer.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.